Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
You're listening to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
And I'm Andy Fleming.
And we're back for year 7 of Yeah Nah Passeran. And maybe our final year, because fascism has been defeated. And to tell us all about it, we have returning guest Dr. Kaz Ross. Thank you, Dr. Kaz.
G'day, Andy, and g'day, Cam. And what a happy day, the end of fascism.
We did it.
We did it. Five years in, we did it.
Dr. Kaz, the National Socialist Network have declared that they are disbanding. Does that mean it's all sorted? We can wrap it up.
You probably didn't know this, but according to the National Socialist Network, they've just had a huge win. They are winning. This was all part of their plan, and this is just the end of one chapter in the long story of them taking power in Australia. So sad to say, they might be disbanding in this current iteration and form, but they'll be back.
Kaz, I thought the law, I'm not a law talking guy, but I've looked at the bill, I've read some commentary, and it seems like even if you were to try and do a dodge of some kind to rebrand or to assume some other form, the law seems pretty strict on these sorts of manifestations. Is that the case? How are they going to proceed from this point?
Yeah, for sure. Look, the big model for them is the UK and what happened to National Action in the UK. And they've learned a lot from that experience. So they know that once National Action was prescribed in the UK, a whole bunch of guys went, oh, yeah, we'll just use a new name. Ba-bang, arrested. Oh, okay, we'll just go to the pub and do our thing. Ba-bang, arrested. Oh, we'll just go and do like posters and stickers. Arrested. Oh, we'll just go and start training together. Arrested. So this time around in Australia, those leaders of NSN know that when these laws come in and they're implemented fully, that there is no way around it. There is no easy way around it. You can't just meme your way through it or try to just create a different name or something like that. So they know that they, as leaders, are up for pretty hefty jail sentences, 10 years or 15 years, if they're the leaders of these groups. So they really don't want the 300 NSN members running around acting like NSN still exists in some form, because it would fall onto them as the leaders. So I've listened to many hours in the last week of Thomas Sewell talking about this, and he makes it very clear. We know from the UK experience, you can't get around it. So I guess the other thing that they've stopped, apart from NSN, they've stopped their whole White Australia project. They were planning to register a federal political party. They've pulled that. They've pulled their European Australian movement, community building. They've stopped that as well. To be honest, I'm not sure if they've stopped the Mother's Club, where they were sitting around felting gnomes and discussing recipes and wearing sack-like dresses. I'm not sure if that stopped.
Sounds more wholesome than hateful.
Yes, I guess if you believe in the patriarchy and you think that women's job is to pump out some kids and serve their Aryan white husband and cook all the meals from scratch and be demure. And of course, according to the Nazis, everything went wrong once women got the vote. that was like really the beginning of the end. So that's one of the first things that they'll do when they win power, according to Saul, is make sure that women never vote ever again. Yeah, so basically this is their plan, completely disband. Saul's telling people don't mix in groups of more than three other members or four other members. He's even saying, look, if you're in a big group online, there's 20,000 people in a group and there's five of you, it might be okay, but don't all go into that group. So he's very taking it very seriously. And before we celebrate that he's going to vanish off the scene, he said, look, it'll probably take me 6 months. Something will happen and I won't take my eyes off politics. I'll still be politically engaged. So my theory is that they're going to follow perhaps one of the German political parties, the neo-Nazi German political parties, and come back with a different political party and commence their activities under that political party.
So they talked about starting White Australia, a political party, and now that's out the window because that will be part of this proposed prescription. Isn't it going to be a little bit suspicious when Somers Tool pops up in a few months with a completely new political party that just happens to follow a lot of the same policies as the White Australia Party? He can't even put on a big fake moustache.
Yeah, a little fake moustache. The Saul said that obviously the new party couldn't have any of the current leadership as the principals of that party. But let's face it, the political system's absolutely ripe for it. If you go on the hellscape called Twitter or X, they're just all going, why is there no decent right-wing party? There's no right-wing party that we can vote for. And this is, we see the bounce in the poll for One Nation. Not that One Nation's actually doing anything to attract that, but people are going, can't vote for the Liberals. Look at them, they're hopeless. So I guess I'll have to vote for One Nation. But wait until the new improved party pops up and they might vote for that. And if they can bring in the more, apart from the ethno-nationalists, so those focused on white Australia, they can bring in the civic nationalists and maybe edge them closer to ethno-nationalism, then they might get a nice, the Aussie party, and next minute they'll be deporting all of us and their remigration plans will be implemented. I think it's possible to do, and there are models overseas where you can get around strict regulation if you're clever about it.
Yes. Good luck, boys. But, Kaz, the other thing I was thinking was that might be taking up some of Afira's time is a High Court challenge, which thus far it seems in terms of fundraising for that has done quite well.
Yeah.
Might that be taking up a lot of his time along with various other legal matters?
I think he's got some, is it something like 23 charges or something that he's facing? Is it some enormous number of charges? He just copped a few new ones the other day.
Yeah, that's in relation just to the events of August last year.
Yeah, he's got other ones as well. But he has been saying, look, I'm not going to do a Nelson Mandela. I'm not going to be a martyr for these laws. I'm not doing 10 years in jail. If you do the crime, you do the time. And if I get 1 or 2 or 3 years for violence, you get that. So it's interesting that they say we're not violent. And then part of their glory reel that they've released in the last week is all the scenes of them kicking people while they're on the ground. So yeah, in their own minds, they're not advocating for violence, but
they're not advocating for anything now, Kaz. They've disbanded.
Oh, that's right. That is true. I keep forgetting. But yeah, Saul has raised a lot of money. I think it's around $130,000 Australian dollars. But what we've got to keep in mind, Andy, is that this is all part of the plan. So according to them, their plan from the beginning was to create a movement that acted as a spearhead, poking holes in liberal democracy's weak spots and exposing this country as a multicultural police state run by the Jews. And they feel that this current bill that's just been through Parliament, the Anti-Hate Speech Combating Anti-Semitism Bill, does exactly that. It agitates a lot of people from the left and the right about no due process, freedom of speech, the requirement for being designated a hate group. You don't have to have been convicted and so forth. So both, you know, the left and the right are being agitated by that and saying this is a very big problem and it's not very good law and it could be used in the past by a very right-wing government to smash political opponents. So what they're saying is we've shown it. The system's mask off now and they're prepared. They're so desperate to stop us, they're prepared to do anything. And from what I see in the Twitter spaces, quite a few of the ex-freedom movement people who are now March for Australia people are saying that as well. They're saying, wow, the NSN have really let the system see what it's all about, which is dictatorial against free speech. And what are we going to do about it?
So, speaking of March for Australia, what are they going to do about it? That's on Monday, on Invasion Day, there will also be marches for Australia around Australia. We expecting a repeat of August 31, or have things perhaps been tamped down a bit by the embarrassment that was the revelation that the entire thing had been orchestrated by Nazis?
Yeah, and Saul's been saying that it's a big disappointment that they can't be at Australia Day March for Australia March because they were planning to have 250 or 300 Nazis in the front, marching at the front of the march. So this was going to be their big triumph. I think that if we take it on a state-by-state basis, down here in Hobart, it was a woeful event. All of the March for Australias have been pretty woeful down here, pretty low attendance and low energy. Hopefully, given that it's Hobart summer, it will rain. So that will put a further literal dampener on it. In the case of Brisbane, they're not even having one in Brisbane. They're having it at the Gold Coast. In the case of Sydney, let's just see who turns up. It's not very appealing. Like, you want to spend your Australia Day waving your flag and celebrating all things Australian. Isn't that great? And their whole spiel is about anti-immigration. So I think they missed the mark there. You're having a celebration day, you're having a whinge. And I think people who might have gone if it was just a celebration, the flag wits, might go to that. But are they going to go again for the same old whinge? I'm not sure. I think the numbers will be down in Sydney. And as for Melbourne, it's anyone's guess, but I think it'll be small. So I'm not sure it's going to have the same kind of impact. And I guess the thing about March for Australia is there's no structure. There's no ongoing way that this can translate into anything significant, although the plan in Sydney is to create these ongoing kind of community-based groups and do seminars and things like that. And they've decided they won't have a membership, so therefore you can't be banned as a hate group because you're not really a group, you're just holding a seminar. And they're going to do survival training and health training and all this sort of stuff. And when the March for Australia leaders were asked, well, that sounds like active club model, like the Nazis training and tribing, like forming a community and training, working out, getting fit. They say, no, nothing like that. We won't have a membership. We'll just run seminars. Okay, they might run one or two. It'll probably fall by the wayside pretty quickly. So I can't see March for Australia amounting to anything significant apart from a public pressure to push this idea of re-migration.
Kaz, I'm just going back a little to this new bill and that's become law and with quite draconian measures for those designated to be hateful and so on. Do you think that there's an expectation that the NSN and another group has been named as being likely to be prescribed and be subject to these laws? Do you think that this will mean that there will be prosecutions? And do you share any concern that's been expressed, as you've said, by people across the political spectrum and various legal experts that the laws make possible a degree of political and other repression that is quite remarkable and could have perhaps unintended or will certainly have consequences in years to come if they're not subject to the kinds of checks and balances that are normally put in place but which seem arguably absent in this case?
Yeah, definitely. The process of being designated a hate group is at the discretion of the minister with no procedural fairness or due process. So the minister decides, yep, you're a hate group. You can't even challenge that or question it in any form. And even the leader of the opposition of the day is not invited to have an opinion on it. I think that's appalling. And we've seen in the UK what happens when, say, something like Palestine Action Group was proscribed as a group. And what's the arrest count now? It's more than 1,000, often elderly people get arrested as terrorists for sitting cross-legged on the ground with a sign saying, I support Palestine Action Group. It's farcical that someone who's 80 and blind and in a wheelchair holding a sign is seen to be a terrorist. But that's the logical conclusion, right? So if you support one of these groups, then you also subject to prosecution penalties. So as much as I delight in NSN disbanding and this bill forcing them to disband, I am despairing that the government's only response to this rise in bigotry and hatred, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, homophobia, probably since the marriage equality referendum and then through the voice referendum, through the elections, through COVID, their only response has just been harder, tighter laws. And it seems to me one of the issues we've got is that the laws they've already brought in haven't even been tested, some of the hate speech laws, and that states are all rushing to bring in their own laws. So we've got the federal law, the state laws. There doesn't seem to be any rectification or lining up of how the state laws on, say, banned symbols like swastikas and the like, how that lines up with federal legislation. And because this whole process has just been rushed through, where's the table that goes, okay, so here are all the hate laws and here's hate speech laws and here's this and here's that in all the states. This is the patchwork we're working with. How can we make this more effective? They've just rushed into this omni bill that's, is it going to survive a high court challenge? I doubt it. And I'm not looking forward to the day when Saul wins a high court challenge and gets this bill knocked down, because at that point we might as well just call him Fuhrer of Australia. So I think a lot of people misunderstand the NSN. They just think they're all idiots living in their mum's house and they're all stupid. That is definitely not the case. They've played a very tight strategic game over 5 years. And if you think 5 years ago there's Jacob Hursant standing there, one guy, and what they did with Moira Deeming and the Liberal Party in Victoria, the way they smashed drag queen story time in libraries and councils, the way they managed to activate Boomer Woffen, the freedom movement people, to go and protest outside those things, just on and on again. And they've had quite a lot of success in smashing the Overton window, and particularly on the issue of migration. So at August 31, it was too hot for March for Australia to talk about re-migration publicly. And now it's almost like a mainstream term. And that's just in a few months. So I think that they've been very strategic and very successful. And rather than see them disbanding as that they've been beaten, I think it's quite the opposite. They predicted it. They provoked it. And we'll see them back again. So this law, of course, there will be other targets, and particularly I'd be thinking about those Palestine groups will be targeted for sure.
I do like that you're taking advantage of the fact that they can't clip you saying that Tom Sewell will be Fuhrer anymore. No, you can say what you like.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think? When Tom Sewell's walking out of the High Court and they've just smashed the bill, what do you think's going to happen?
I don't think it'll be too great, but yeah, I agree with you that they've had a lot of success in pushing the Overton window a long way, but I also, in terms of who's being strategic, I look at the groups that took advantage of the opportunities that were presented when they were out booing at the Dawn service. I don't know if the booing was as effective as the fact that there were right-wing dark money groups ready to start running ads saying, we don't agree with the booing, of course, but it raises an important question about whether we should be doing Welcome to Country at Dawn service. Like, those groups were ready to take the opportunities handed to them by Nazis.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been the Nazi strategy all along. They say, we are the tip of the spear. And I believe that even though I have I can't really present a lot of evidence, but I believe that they've spent the last few years building coalitions across the right-wing political spectrum, making contacts, getting information, and so on and so forth, so that other groups, it's like, what are those big whales called, those whale shark things that swim along in the ocean and they're like massive, and then all the other little feeding things benefit from them. It's a symbiotic relationship that they're smashing the Overton window and the rest are like, great, awesome, we'll move along. Sometimes those strategies don't work. For example, some academics in Sydney tried to form another active club called Australia Sons, and it was just an abject failure from the very beginning because it was going to be an active club that wasn't a Nazi active club, although Jews were not allowed to join. So I'm not sure how they thought that would work, but it failed. They couldn't do it. But they tried. They tried. So I think that March for Australia is basically going to be the leading explicitly Nazi group in the future, because if you listen to what they say, they mightn't be talking about Hitler. Sometimes they do, but they mightn't be talking about Hitler, but all of their talking points are from NSN. And we saw that in their speeches, and we'll see it again on Monday in the speeches. They create this ecosystem that other groups benefit from and push further and further to the right, whether it's smashing Palestinians or smashing Aboriginal sovereignty or any of those sorts of issues.
Kaz, one curious animal that's part of that ecosystem, very closely related to the NSN, is the publication, The Noticer. And I notice in the legislation, it is quite broad and it does provide legal grounds for the prosecution of those who are, if not members of a hate group, acting in ways that support its activities. I'm wondering, do you have any opinion about what the fate of the Noticer might be? Because I think it skates pretty close to the line that the minister has been lamenting for some time.
Yeah, definitely. And not just in the way that it presents crime. Its main focus is to take crime from all over Australia and say, look, it's those black and brown people doing this. It's not so much that, it's when they have their opinion pieces. And they're clearly basically a mouthpiece for NSN. It's been a very successful strategy, starting the Noticer and getting their points of view across through the Noticer. Yeah, I'm not sure. I would love to see the Noticer exposed and smashed because it is very influential. It's another successful activity. Of course, no one knows who started it. There are rumours of who started it, but it's never been proven. But we can see how close they were to NSN, and they were just ended up being an NSN propaganda arm, basically. Saul says that he's not about to become a content creator, podcaster guy for money. But he believes that all of them can be have individual accounts on social media and keep going with their political message. And we've seen that already this week with Jacob Hursant deleting all his previous videos, enticing and exhilarating videos that go for, what, about a minute. They're all being deleted, and he's now wearing, instead of his black uniform, a white shirt, standing in front of Australian flag, and droning on with the same kind of stuff. I guess he won't be calling for blood and revolution, perhaps not so openly, in the new iteration.
That doesn't stop his poetry.
Award-winning. When are we having the Nazi poetry competition? There's been some dreadful songs written, and some of them are going to get sung in Sydney, March for Australia, on Monday. Talking about the heroes of the NSN and what legends they are, and strumming along the guitar and singing along, and yeah, good old sing along, lionizing the NSN. But I think that one thing we haven't mentioned is that one of the senior Nazis is still being held on remand. And he's been in there for something like 8 weeks now due to allegedly saying some dodgy stuff on Telegram online. I think that's a problem. I just really don't believe that he should be held in those sort of very severe conditions for that length of time for it's not really the most major of crimes. And when I talk to people around the place, most people have that opinion. What are they doing? They're turning him into a martyr, into an international martyr. He's not allowed to have books. He's limited access to exercise. And it's all for saying things on the internet. So I'm not really sure why he's never been bailed at this point. I don't know what opinion you two have of that situation, but it does concern me that you just lock people up and go very hard on them. Like they're obviously trying to break him. Not that I have any love for Joel Davis, I just have to point that out there. But I do think that us on the left have to accept that when this sort of treatment is being meted out to neo-Nazis, we just need a turn in the political wheel and then it could be meted out to us.
Could be and has been in the past.
Yeah, and still is. Look at what happens to environment activists like Blockade Australia.
Yeah.
The Nazis always think that they're the only ones that have ever been targeted. They're the only ones that are followed and bugged. They're the only ones that get onerous bail conditions. They have no idea.
Yeah, those who are in doubt should read some more Australian and other political history. But it seems to me like he chose to go after the wrong person at the wrong time. He was, as I understand it, arrested along with several others at about the same time. This was the outcome of the special unit that the Australian Federal Police had created. I don't know, not being a lawyer, I couldn't tell you why his case has been, why he's been denied bail on three occasions. It certainly, on the face of it, is severe punishment. And I would also say I agree with you that it does, I think it's in some ways reflective or reflected in the legislation that's now passed, which is very punitive. And it may not, even if we assume, or even if let's take at face value the idea that this is intended to have particular consequences, which are to limit expressions of anti-Semitism and other hateful doctrines, which are the cause of real harms, real physical harms, such as those that were enacted last month in Sydney. They can have other effects, as you've said, in this case where someone becomes a sympathetic party, where someone's being punished for something they've said, which may be objectionable, but without having been convicted of a crime. And of course, but that's also, I guess I say that in knowledge of that there are lots of people who have been denied bail on a range of grounds, which on the face of it appear to be objectionable or have to do with some judgment by the courts, which may be unfair. But that's one thing, that's a legal matter. And politically speaking, yeah, I think you're right. It's precisely these kinds of circumstances that can create political martyrs, which are of use to movements. I think Sewell may be correct in thinking the laws, he might be, if found guilty of some of the worst crimes that are enunciated in the Act, sentenced to 15 years jail, for offences that do they really merit that sort of punishment? Even if you take, especially if you take the minister's statements, public statements, the effect that we object to these groups, but unfortunately the laws don't allow us to punish them as we think we should be able to because they don't actually meet the current legal standard of a terrorist group. And yet the kinds of punishments that are contained in the legislation approximate those that are enacted against people who've been judged to be terrorists in a court of law in which they've had a defence and so on and so forth, the kinds of checks and balances, let's call them, that would normally apply in other sorts of cases are completely absent. And that's part of the kind of selling point for the legislation. And, of course, those with impeccable establishment credentials have pointed out that there are serious risks to democracy and freedom of speech inherent in the nature of these laws that make them objectionable. And I think that's the kind of thing, if you can, whoever is subjected to these sorts of laws and punished accordingly, yeah, they will engender some degree of public sympathy, which in turn may produce results which are antithetical to those which have been pronounced as being the intention of the law. The only other thing I'd say is I doubt very much that Sewell will be the only one who's bringing legal objections to this law. There's any number of groups who, if they wanted to and do and have the resources, could challenge it in all different sorts of ways. So I'm not sure how things are going to pan out. And I say all this as not being a lawyer and not being conversant enough with the law and how it applies to make any kind of judgment as to the likelihood of success of any of these challenges. But I can't see them being unchallenged. And I guess the other question is, what effects will they have? And as you've also alluded to, Kaz, there's a whole range of other measures which can be taken that can undercut the appeal of particularly vicious doctrines like Nazism, or can be the forms of service or not, the social services that might help people, young people especially, who are in distress for one reason or another, to resolve those issues without being sucked into or groomed by these quite nefarious Nazis. And I think there should be, obviously, a lot of resources dedicated to that. And certainly, in my experience, there have been family, friends of people who've been drawn into these groups who are desperate and needing assistance, and it's simply, it's not available to them. I think that would be a good thing to do and would help undercut the appeal of some of these groups and certainly contribute to what I think is a much firmer sense of, you know, what's termed social cohesion.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. When I'm asked what's a single most effective thing the government could do, I say improve renters' rights in this country. If people don't have anywhere safe and clean and mould-free to live and they feel like it's a race to try to get somewhere to live and they're always going to lose, then they're very ripe and open to being recruited into some kind of campaign that says, see, this is not fair, this is your own country, you grew up here, why can't you get somewhere to live, you've got no future, and so on and so forth. And we see that if social security system was livable and if people had renters' rights like we have in countries in Europe, then perhaps young people wouldn't feel so despairing about the future. If we look at Sewell's group, he is attracting the younger crowd. You look at something like One Nation's membership or the Liberal Party membership, they're all Gen X or boomers. It's a very old group. And Sewell has said in the past, we aim to attract people under 35. So I can't really see a bunch of 20-year-olds voting for Pauline Hanson, to be honest, but I can see them voting for some charismatic ex-soldier type who's running a hard line and saying, we promise you a future and a place. People feel there's no future. What do they get from groups like Sewell's? They get a sense of, you're special, you're important, and you matter, and there's a future for you, and we're going to create that future. So I think that's an issue. With the legislation, one of the problems that we've got is that you can go online in these spaces that are no longer moderated, such as X or in private Instagram or on Telegram, and just say the most extreme things, and you're not going to get censored or moderated in any form. So I've seen people blasting away online and saying really very concerning things and feeling, well, it's free speech, I can say whatever I like. We haven't really understood in this country about civility and the responsibility of speech. You can't just say whatever idiot thing that comes into your head. And last week, the political operative John McGowan put out a Substack in which he talked about this new legislation. He said basically it'll just catch idiots. It'll catch people that are just blasting away and don't understand how to couch what they're saying in terms that will avoid the legislation. And I think he's probably right. From what I can see, I was interested to see the Nazi salute ban and the swastika ban and all of that and see where that went. Apart from Jacob Hersant doing a Hitler salute, some guy with some old tats on his legs at the beach getting prosecuted for banned symbols, is that really what the legislation was aimed at? And I think John McGowan uses the example of a lot of the people that got caught up in England and have got charges for what they've said online. And they may have said one or two comments that were pretty edgy, next minute 2-year jail sentence. I'm just not sure that's really the way to go if we want to improve the quality of speech and political speech in this country. So basically, you can still do your Nazi dog whistling as long as you do it in a highfalutin way that's going to get around the laws. And I think that's where those tweed-wearing groups will shine, because that's what they've been doing, going under the radar but pushing to the right.
Kaz, I'll just note one of the concerns you raised before was that what happens when the political winds change and there's somebody else in charge with access to these laws. I'll note that when The Age put this to Steve Bannon about some of the drastic legislation they're bringing in over in America and what happens when there's a Democratic president with access to these powers, he did make the point there will never be another Democratic president, so it doesn't matter. Do you think maybe that's where Albo's coming from? The 1,000-year Albo Reich has begun and we don't ever have to worry about Peter Dutton being at the wheel.
We've been there before. If you're old enough, way before my time, you remember Menzies, right? So Menzies was in for a lot of years, and it would have been very distressing if you were on the left, because he just reigned on and on. So that's the thing, in our system, you can just keep getting elected, but don't they usually get bumped off by someone within their own party? Isn't the Labour Party specialised in that in the last 10 years or so? Yeah, look, I think it's very concerning. Steve Bannon and all the Project 2025 people, in America, the people who are basically running the government in America, they obviously see that elections are bad. They've got the power. They're going to use the power. They're going to smash their enemies and make sure that they use some dodgy method to get Trump reelected. But what do you do if he dies? He can't be far off it now with some of the crazy stuff he's doing. It's not going to be a, what is that? Yeah, the hillbilly president. Yeah, it's very concerning. So, yeah, maybe we are endless Labour, the perilous, parlous state of the Liberal Party. It's just an embarrassment. And not that I'm lamenting their demise, but I do think that in our political system, we do need effective opposition parties. And they're not very effective, and they're extremely right-wing, actually, despite their current leaders' attempt to push back to the centre. They still seem pretty virulently on the right. At least they're not going to wheel out Peter Dutton. I guess they'll wheel out Josh Frydenberg and bring him in. Mr. Hastie, I'm not sure about Mr. Hastie. I know that Mr. Hastie has lost all the support from the March for Australia crew because of his support for the bill. He voted for the bill. So they've ditched him now. He's no longer their hero.
He wasn't there for them when they needed a hand.
It's unclear what his stance was going to be on the bill, because some of them wrote to him and he assured them that he was against the bill and that he wouldn't be voting for the bill, and then he voted for the bill. I think people who don't understand the political, the horse trading that goes on in politics, where you're having, here's the legislation, okay, now let's negotiate, and then it turns into some other different thing. I think people from outside politics don't understand that process. So they think you were against the original bill, so you must be against the bill in all its forms. But he did vote for the bill. Yep, that's it. He's off the list as a future leader as far as the March for Australia types are concerned. So, yeah, I think it's a concern that Steve Bannon's saying that about Trump. I was thinking today, actually, it's a pity that Trump didn't win the election against Biden, because they weren't ready. You know, the 2025 crew weren't ready, but they had those 4 years in between to really plan their strategy, which is where were the points of resistance in the first term of Trump and what can we do? We'll just sack the people. We'll just sack the opposition. We'll just put our own people in. And they really came in ready to roll from day one. Whereas if they'd won that second term against Biden, they were just limping along. There were people putting obstacles in the way. They couldn't manipulate the Department of Justice in the way that they wanted. So there was some limitation on what they could do. But now they're just, yeah, it's against the law. We don't care. We're just going off shooting people in the face. That's what we do now.
Kez, on that happy note, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, lovely to speak to you guys. I always feel so cheered up and enthusiastic and excited. But look, we take the win. There's no NSN. I'm happy. I won't have to listen to hours of Joel Davis and Thomas Sewell droning on every week. And yeah, I'd like to go into retirement, but sadly, I think they'll be back.
Oh, if people want to find you online, where can they do so? Still in the cesspools of X?
I am there. Basically, I find the blue space a bit too boring. So, yeah, I'm on the hellscape of Twitter.
At Tassie Kaz. Kaz, thanks for joining us. Andy, we'll be back next week. See you later.
See you then.
Thanks, guys.
Monday, the 26th of January, marks Invasion Day, and 3CR's First Nations broadcast team will be bringing an annual Invasion Day broadcast to the airwaves. From 10 a.m.
In 1788, down Sydney Cove, first boat people land, and they say, "Sorry, boys, I gained your loss. We're gonna steal your land."
Our team will be broadcasting speeches from the NAM rally and conversations with people attending the march, as well as connecting with Aboriginal activists from across the continent at the forefront of campaigns for land rights, restoration, restitution, and real treaties. And learning about the way it may be done. And of course, we'll be playing deadly music from our incredible black artists, past and present. So keep it tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au streaming live on Monday, the 26th of January from 10 a.m.
Are you a current 3CR subscriber? Your membership helps us stay true to our community values.
It enables us to produce over 100 local shows each week, train and support new volunteers and broadcasters, and maintain our transmission technology.
Your subscription helps us cover issues important to you, like public housing, First Nations justice, community languages,
advocacy for Palestine, celebrating queer and trans communities, and bringing you the best of local independent music.
As we head into our 50th year of broadcasting, your ongoing subscription is as vital to the station today as it was for those subscribing in 1976.
Help to keep 3CR unique by becoming a subscriber today.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 03 9419 8377.